culture to politics. Your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day to ask a very serious question. What would we say about a Republican leader? Say even a president of the United States. Say even President Donald Trump. If Donald Trump had praised Vladimir Putin as visionary and pretty rational. I mean, recently, Vladimir Putin, in his State of the State address to the Russian people, was rattling sabers and promising dire consequences on the United States and talking about their development of all kinds of new devastating weapons. Didn't sound so visionary or rational, but there's somebody very close to the President of the United States who had words of praise for Vladimir Putin. One of the most dangerous dictators in the world right now. This in the midst of basically killing, God forbid, but it appears that that's the effort. Alexei Navalny, his main opponent and critic, who's imprisoned on hunger strike right now in Russia. We will get to that. We will also get to the strange cult of Greta Thunberg. When does she get to be old enough so that she is held to the same kind of standard that you'd normally apply to rational adults? We will get to that as well on the Medved Show in a little bit of conversation about Earth Day and its deeper significance. Let me go back first to this issue of Micaiah Bryant, because it's, of course, tragic when any 16-year-old girl is killed, but this is one of those instances where it is so difficult to fault the police officer for his split-second response, which may have saved an innocent girl's life. And no, Micaiah Bryant wasn't an innocent girl. She was unmistakably, they've released now other footage of this encounter from a greater distance. And there's no question about it that she was in the process of trying to stab the other identified young lady who was in pink and with a very real knife that was recovered on the scene that you can see in her hand. There's not really a question. And I mentioned before, and I'm following up on this because I was very critical of LeBron James yesterday. And right now, it seems appropriate to praise him because he's doing something that is very, very difficult for politicians to do. It's very difficult for people in the public eye generally to do. He's kind of saying, okay, I was wrong. There's an acknowledgement of error. That's a very, very good thing. That's an appropriate thing. That's something that helps Americans grow and helps our public discourse improve. The ESPN covers Los Angeles Lakers star LeBron James posted and later deleted a tweet yesterday about the fatal police shooting of Micaiah Bryant, a 16-year-old black girl in Columbus, Ohio. In a series of tweets, James explained why he deleted the post. And what he writes in his tweet, and I'll read it just as it's written, anger, and he puts that in all capitals, anger does any of us any good. And that includes myself. Gathering all the facts and educating does, though. My anger still is here for what happened to that Lil, L-I-L, girl. My sympathy for her family, and may justice prevail. And then he has another tweet a few minutes later, 9 minutes later, where he says, I'm so damn tired of seeing black people killed by police. I took the tweet down because it's being used to create more hate. This isn't about one officer. It's about the entire system, and they always use our words to create more racism. I am so desperate for more accountability. And, okay, his original tweet that got him into trouble was showing a picture of the officer, Nicholas Reardon, along with the words, "You're next," and then accountability, hashtag. And right now, I mean, obviously, the one thing that the Derek Chauvin verdict, which continues to be, of course, the big story of the week, the one thing that that achieves is accountability. But there also has to be accountability, as at least there's a little bit with LeBron James taking the original tweet down. There has to be accountability for the press. And this is fascinating because you can see some elements of the mainstream media who are trying to be responsible. And one element in the mainstream media, NBC, which is being deeply irresponsible, it seems to me, in their coverage. This is how the three major networks covered the initial report on the police shooting of Micaiah Bryant. First, NBC, which left out part of the 911 call where a girl is on the line saying, "These grown girls over here trying to fight us, trying to stab us." That was left out. Listen to the way it sounded on NBC.
Officer Nicholas Reardon, who joined the force in December of 2019, was responding to a 911 call.
"We need a police officer here now."
Video shows Reardon approaching a group of young people in this driveway.
What the video shows is the female with the knife attempting to stab the first female.
Reardon fires his weapon four times, striking Bryant. Officers are seen and heard performing CPR. Body camera footage shows a knife on the ground.
Okay, now there's a much better context in the report by CBS News. Listen.
They were responding to a 911 call about someone who had a knife.
"These grown girls over here trying to fight us, trying to stab us."
When Officer Reardon arrived, Bryant appears to be chasing one girl before threatening another. Slowed down, police say the video shows 16-year-old Bryant raising a knife. Officer Reardon repeatedly shouts, "Get down," and then he fires.
"Get down!"
Okay, do you see how much more honest that is, how much more full that is with context, rather than trying to go along with a standard narrative? There was also a much better job on ABC Network, and yes, it's encouraging when they're actually doing the right thing. Listen.
"Hey. These grown girls over here trying to fight us, trying to stop us, get here now."
Today, police releasing 911 calls and new body camera footage of the incident. Officer Nicholas Reardon stepping out of his vehicle, approaching multiple people in an altercation. It appears Micaiah Bryant, in the black T-shirt and jeans, swings a knife at the girl in pink. Officer Reardon then firing a burst of shots.
"She had a knife. She just went at her."
Officer.
Okay. And again, the context is so important. This is not necessarily the way that's reported by Ilhan Omar. She spoke today at Dante Wright's funeral. And we will get to that. We will also be talking with Todd Myers of the Washington Policy Center about Earth Day and how some of the extreme Democratic legislation that is being considered by the state of Washington is actually not going to do anything to actually bring a cleaner or a safer or a more pristine environment. It's going to undermine efforts in that direction. We will get to that and also get to an acknowledgement of a milestone in the vaccine program that is upsetting people on the left a great deal. Why? Because it gives some credit to Republicans. That and why it is that 2022, Karl Rove says, is shaping up to be a potentially big, big year for Republican candidates. Why? We will get to that and more on The Medved Show.
Michael Medved.
Michael Medved show, the whole idea of everything being reduced to simplicities, it's not even campaign season yet. At least it's not supposed to be. Though the Congress is so closely divided. I mean, everything is so closely divided in Washington, even though the presidential election wasn't all that close. And it wasn't. But the congressional elections were extraordinarily close. No one expected the Republicans to do as well as we did in House elections. And right now, as Karl Rove points out, Republicans only have to gain far less than the average number of seats. Rove writes today in the Wall Street Journal, a perception that's long haunted Democrats, that they're anti-police and weak on law and order, hurt them in 2020 and is likely to hurt them even more in their electoral prospects in 2022. I think he's right. He points out that the average loss in the House for a president's party in his first midterm has been about 28 seats. If that happens next year, Republicans will have 241 seats to the Democrats, 194. That's if they just do average for a midterm election. They don't need to win all those 28 seats. They just need to win five. Then Nancy Pelosi will no longer be speaker. And Karl Rove talks about an appearance that was made by the head of the Democratic campaign for retaining the House, whose name is Sean Patrick Maloney. He's a congressman from New York. And he was on Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and MSNBC. And even though Joe Scarborough was once upon a time a member of the Republican Party and a member of Congress from Florida, he was very, very critical during the Trump administration. And I'm not even sure that Joe would identify himself any longer as a Republican. In any event, he lobbed what Karl Rove describes as a softball question to Sean Patrick Maloney on MSNBC. And he said, okay, how are you going to counteract Republican charges that Democrats favor defunding the police? They favor cancel culture, socialism, and packing the court. And Maloney didn't have any answer. He goes through, Karl Rove does, the idea that he kept talking about, we're fighting for racial justice and we're fighting for climate change and we're fighting for racial justice and we're fighting for racial justice. And here's the question, says Karl Rove. What in Mr. Maloney's rant would convince a single swing voter to support Democrats in 2022? And that wasn't the end for the Democrats shooting themselves in their own feet. He points out that last week, Michigan Democrat Representative Rashida Tlaib tweeted, quote, policing in our country is inherently and intentionally racist. No more policing, no more incarceration, no more militarization. Okay, that was so extreme that the police chief in her own hometown, Detroit, that's what she represents in Congress of the United States, called for her to resign. She's not going to resign. But the representative's fellow Democrats only mumbled. All Speaker Pelosi could manage to assert, writes Karl Rove, is that not all police can be painted with the same brush. While White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said Ms. Tlaib's tweet was not the president's view. Oh, good. The president doesn't want to abolish the police? No more policing, no more incarceration, no more militarization. What does that mean for us if we have no more police. And then, of course, he points out that on Saturday, a representative, Maxine Waters, told protesters that if Derek Chauvin wasn't found guilty, we get to not only stay on the street, but we have got to fight for justice. We've got to get more confrontational so they know that we mean business. Now, look, this is one of those things I mentioned before that basically this was the election that turned around America. This was the issue. The issue, policing, public safety, basically law and order. And by the way, I think one of these issues that nobody really talks about in Washington, this is primarily a local issue, is the issue of homeless encampments everywhere. Basically, the whole broken windows effect, the idea of public order breaking down, of once beautiful downtowns where people have put their money and their sweat equity and their hopes and dreams into building up little businesses, and then those businesses are attacked in riots, or they are simply attacked by the ongoing level of crime, where we're supposed to have no more policing, we're supposed to defund the police. How does a small business survive? Like the small business, actually, that George Floyd went into, that Cup Foods, where they were offering cups of coffee, and he had come in to buy a package of cigarettes, apparently. How does that business survive if that part of the city is basically closed to traffic and no police officers are allowed to come in there? And I don't know what the future of what they call George Floyd Square is going to be. But all of this goes down to a very basic realization, which is that for a lot of people in this country, and no, it's not just white supremacists or people on the extremes, it's for ordinary Americans. It's for most Americans. I think it's for most African Americans. I think it's for most Latinos. I think it's for most Asians. The idea of public order is basic, which is why I think people like Governor Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, and others who are pursuing anti-riot bills to try to prevent their cities from becoming the next Portland, or dare I say it, the next Seattle, in the midst of the chop chaz nonsense of an independent little quasi-anarchist republic in the midst of a big city, why people fear that, and their right to fear it, and the right to demand that the very first thing has to be a return to rules and order and protection. What about the environment and protecting the environment this Earth Day? How are liberals actually undermining that cause? We'll be talking about that coming up.
Entertain your brain.
It's awesome.
Every day on The Michael Medved Show.
And every day, particularly on Earth Day today. And why should conservatives celebrate Earth Day? Because what Earth Day was set up to do was to try to protect, preserve, and improve the environment immediately around us. Not to be concerned with abstractions as much about what happens 50 years from now or 150 years from now, to be concerned about our immediate environment, about trails and parks and trees and breathable air and fisheries, things of that nature. And yes, nature is part of it. Todd Myers is the director of the Center for the Environment at Washington Policy Center. Washington Policy Center is a priceless resource in our state, not only trying to keep our state prosperous, but to keep our state green, not just green in the money sense, but green in the environmentally friendly sense. Todd, happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day. And sometimes it
it feels funny for people on the center right to say that, but I always tell people to look at a map and look at where conservatives and people on the center right generally live, and it's generally where you find nature, where you find agriculture, where you find forests. So it should be more common for conservatives to say Happy Earth Day.
By all means, it should be. And one of the things that I think that that you talk about, and particularly some of the fights that are being taking place right now in Olympia, Washington, the state capital, around this Earth Day, have to do with some of the liberals' obsession with abstractions and things that are very far away, while they ignore things that are down to earth, like a state salmon recovery. What is Governor Inslee, what are the Democrats in the legislature doing wrong when it comes to the funds for salmon recovery, which really do matter?
Well, the best solutions come from the ground, from people who have an attachment to the environment and have the knowledge to make those solutions work. So rather than oppose top-down restrictions and regulations, what you need to do is to find the people on the ground. We hear a lot of talk about concern about salmon and other things like that, but if you actually look at the state budgets, they don't match that rhetoric. We're actually getting a smaller percentage of the budget for salmon in this budget than we did 2 years ago. But the people who are making the difference are often people in local communities. And in fact, tribal communities like the Nisqually tribe, who have a very strong attachment to salmon recovery, and they have the freedom to do things because they're a sovereign nation. And so they actually are doing some of the most innovative work, and they're accountable. If they fail, you know, it hurts them. If the state fails, the politicians are rarely held accountable. And so that combination of knowledge and accountability is really where we need to go to help not just salmon, but a lot of the environment.
Okay, where's an example of when it comes with the whole climate change, big international conference with Greta Thunberg and John Kerry and more? All of that is going on far away. How can we actually use markets and communities to help on the issue of climate change?
Well, let me give you a very simple example, a very tangible one, which is smart thermostats. So a lot of people either have like a Google Nest or an Ecobee. And what that does when you put that in your home is it uses artificial intelligence to keep your home the temperature that you want, but does it in a very efficient way so that you're using the least amount of electricity. And it doesn't matter whether you think climate change is a crisis or you think it's, you know, not serious at all. Everybody wants to save energy and electricity and money. And so those sorts of tangible changes make a big difference over the long term in environmental impact. Meanwhile, top-down proposals like green building standards and things like that often fail. And in fact, I did research on green building standards in Washington State and found that green schools use more energy per square foot than non-green schools. Cookie cutter political approaches don't work. Personal approaches that reward you for helping the environment do.
This also goes to one of those issues that most people don't associate with the environment, but an issue that has real environmental impact for the parks that we all cherish, which is homeless encampments. What's a better alternative for building, say, affordable housing or dealing with the homeless issue than basically spending unlimited sums of money to preserve the status quo?
Yeah, it's really frustrating. One of the big frustrations I have is that we waste a lot of money on things that don't help the environment, or we waste a lot of money on things that feel good without thinking about what the alternatives are. And as you point out, we're spending huge amounts of money on the homeless. I think it's not just bad for the homeless, but it is bad for the environment. And in fact, there was a stormwater expert who was finding lots of chemicals in the water in Puget Sound and Lake Washington and elsewhere in Washington State. And when asked, well, where do you think these are coming from? He said, I think it's because of the homeless encampments. And I think it's because we're not treating sewage and there's other chemicals associated with them that are getting into the water. So you know, poorly treating the homeless, not giving them affordable housing or not, you know, restricting housing so that we can't build more housing so it's available, doesn't just have a human cost, it has an environmental cost.
Yeah, I mean, we recently took a walk all around Green Lake, and there's a little corner of Green Lake, which is a beautiful park right here in downtown Seattle, and there's a not so pretty or scenic homeless encampment with a bunch of trailers and RVs and other vehicles right at the corner of this this beautiful little piece of nature in an urban environment. In terms of fiscal responsibility, is it going to be necessary to raise taxes to make environmental progress?
No. The first step, as I said, is quit wasting money on bad but trendy ideas. So, for example, we spent a lot of money subsidizing solar power, solar panels in Washington State. Washington State is rated by the National Renewable Energy Laboratory as the worst place in the United States to have solar power. We have a
sunshine shortage here.
Yeah, we do, especially in Western Washington. And yet we spend a huge amount of money subsidizing that. We also spend a huge amount of money installing electric vehicle charging stations that are used primarily by the wealthy. And now we have a tax credit for people who can afford a hydrogen vehicle. The lowest cost hydrogen vehicle is $58,000. So we spend a lot of time giving wealthy people money that won't be important in the decisions that they make, but feel good to politicians. The first step is stop wasting that money and use it more effectively. We could simply stop wasting the money on solar panels and put that money into projects that actually work, and Washington State would immediately meet its 2020 or 2021 CO2 reduction targets, targets that we will miss currently. So if we just stopped wasting money and used that money more wisely, we wouldn't have to raise taxes. But the second thing is that when we do raise taxes, we end up spending it on lots of silly things that are politically popular but don't actually help the environment. And I think that's why putting more money in the hands of politicians and hoping that they'll make the right decisions when they're not held accountable for failure is the reason that Washington is failing to achieve its CO2 targets, it's failing to recover salmon, and our forests are still unhealthy.
Okay, it's necessary that people go directly to our website, to michaelmedved.com. There's a great big green, appropriately, banner in that website for the Washington Policy Center. Get involved. Find out about what you can do in your home, in your community, in your neighborhood to help on environmental issues and issues of just fiscal sanity and basic stability here in the state of Washington. The Washington Policy Center is fighting for you in Olympia and across this state. Check it out at michaelmedved.com. Todd, keep up the great work.
Michael Medved.
That phrase may sound shrill or alarmist, but it's not.
It's the Michael Medved Show.
And I don't know if Al Gore was part of the big Leaders Climate Summit that occurred today, Earth Day, under the auspices of John Kerry, who is, of course, the climate czar, as if anyone can actually rule our climate. He was at the White House today, and he announced ambitious new goals for the United States. Listen to former Senator, former Secretary of State John Kerry.
You said twice getting to net zero is going to be hard, really hard. And just remind everybody that will depend on whether or not we have some breakthrough technologies and breakthrough innovations, number one. But even if we get to net zero, we still have to get carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. So this is a bigger challenge than a lot of people have sort of really grabbed onto yet.
Okay. when you talk about bigger challenge and getting carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, I mean, carbon dioxide's part of our atmosphere. It is. It's consumed by trees, for instance. And the idea of removing all carbon dioxide from the atmosphere when human beings breathe it out, I mean, it's a visionary goal. And speaking of visionaries, there was praise from Mr. Kerry. I guess he's now Ambassador Curry officially because he's in charge of negotiating with world leaders. He had some surprisingly positive things to say about a very controversial world leader. This is clip 12.
I listened to President Putin today. I thought he was pretty rational and put some decent visionary thoughts on about things we might want to be looking at and cooperating together. And he talked about that possibility. So just as with China, where we found a way to try to at least create this chain, this line of communication, and where we have a long way to go, but it's a beginning.
Okay, fine, good. Yes, we should definitely cooperate on climate and anywhere we can without compromising American interests together with Russia and with China. But just try to imagine for a moment that President Trump had said those things about President Putin. Do you think there might be some pushback? And of course, somebody who never gets pushback, because even though I think she's now legally an adult, she is viewed by everybody as this adorable little kid who's going to get the Nobel Peace Prize sooner or later. Look, if Al Gore deserves the Nobel Peace Prize on climate, why not Greta Thunberg? She had yet another message for world leaders from the younger generation for whom she is the anointed and elected and incontestable leader. Listen.
How long do you honestly believe that people in power like you will get away with it? How long do you think you can continue to ignore the climate crisis, the global aspect of equity and historic emissions without being held accountable? You get away with it now, but sooner or later, people are going to realize what you have been doing all this time. That's inevitable. You still have time to do the right thing and to save your legacies. But that window of time is not going to last for long. What happens then? We, the young people, are the ones who are going to write about you in the history books. We are the ones who get to decide how you will be remembered. So my advice for you is to choose wisely.
My advice for you is to choose wisely. So profound. Are there people out there who feel that Greta Thunberg is speaking for you? No? Well, how about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez? They had a press conference 2 days ago for Democrats pushing for the Green New Deal. This is approaching Earth Day. And listen to the way she tries to connect this again to racial issues, which are so precious and so paramount to Democrats as we move forward to the 2022 election. Here's AOC.
The climate crisis is a crisis born of injustice. And it is a crisis born of the pursuit of profit at any and all human and ecological cost.
That's right.
Which means that we must recognize in legislation that the trampling of indigenous rights is a cause of climate change. The trampling of racial justice is a cause of climate change. Because we are allowing people and we are allowing ourselves to make sure to we are allowing folks to deny ourselves human rights and deny people the right to health care, the right to housing and education.
Okay, can someone explain this to me? I mean, honestly, can we try to connect the dots here between giving people the right to housing and health care and education and climate change? I mean, if you're going to give people the right to housing, doesn't that involve building more houses? And doesn't building more houses? Doesn't building more hospitals, more schools, doesn't that take consumption of resources? The idea that somehow equity, racial equity, is going to breed a better climate. Well, look at China. The climate in China is awful. We have a friend who's he's back now, but he spent close to 10 years in Beijing as a missionary and a Christian missionary. And the climate in Beijing is awful. It's truly terrible. You have to wear masks, not just when there's a pandemic, but all the time, because the air is horribly polluted. China makes more than its share of contributions to CO2 emissions and other disasters. So really, and China, in terms of a rejecting the capitalist system, well, they do. And then there's also this attempt to tie together, to blame the police. No, really, to blame the police for climate change. This is a representative, member of the House of Representatives, Cori Bush. She's a Democrat of Missouri. She says this about police violence and the environment. Listen.
We also recognize the threat police violence poses to our environment and ensured that none of this funding go toward forces like our policing system that worsen our environmental injustice.
Okay, again, can someone, this is so monumentally puzzling and so stupid, frankly. How does policing threaten the environment? In other words, for real threats to the environment that compromise the environment where people live and they try to operate businesses and they try to improve their neighborhoods and they try to improve basically the circumstance of our life, littering, graffiti, destruction of private property, even the chopping down of trees in public parks. I remember we had an incident of that involving a liberal, very liberal judge here in Washington State who, a very unauthorized, had called for chopping down trees in Coleman Park because they were blocking his point of view. He eventually was ran into legal trouble. But how does any of that get enforced? How does any environmental standards get enforced without policing? And how is it that police officers are responsible for degrading the environment? I honestly don't understand this for even a moment. But then again, there's something else that I don't understand. Most Americans, wherever you live, don't want to see riots defacing big cities night after night after night. They don't want to be Portland. And they don't want to be cities that are basically paralyzed. So the Republicans have come up with a great many efforts on the state level to deal with the threat of riots. Why should that be controversial? We will get to that and much more in this greatest nation on God's green earth.